Now there are three. The atmosphere of Eumaeus's hut was warm and reassuring. Odysseus thought he might easily get accustomed to the sound and smell of pigs. As dawn broke after another night's sleep, Odysseus helped the swineherd lay the breakfast fire. Outside in the yard, Eumaeus's four ferocious guard dogs set up a whining and yapping sound that could almost be described as affectionate. Those savage animals now knew that Odysseus was a friend of their master, but they still growled menacingly whenever he got near them. Importunate strangers were lucky to escape without bites.
"A friend of yours is approaching, I think," Odysseus said to Eumaeus. "Someone the dogs know and like."
A young man, barely out of boyhood, stood in the doorway. Eumaeus, with a cry of, "My boy!" leapt to his feet, took the youth's hands in his, kissed the centre of his brow, each of his eyes, and finally the palms of his hands. He and the young man had tears rolling down their cheeks. Odysseus was moved by the sight.
"You didn't tell me you had a son, Eumaeus?"
Eumaeus was almost dancing for joy.
"This is not my son, sir. This is the young man I was telling you of, the heir to the kingdom. This is Telemachus. He is like a son to me, though, aren't you, lad? Now, I know you've been to Pylos. Thank the gods you're safely back. And you've come to visit your old friend. A rare occurrence these days. I suppose you've had to stay at the palace to keep an eye on those damned suitors."
"That's it. That's it. Exactly."
Odysseus did not hear much beyond the word Telemachus. The world around him began to hum and spin, and the light closed in. He sank down onto the bench. This was his son. This was Telemachus. He was tall. Was he handsome? Silhouetted like that in the doorway, it was hard to tell. Odysseus tried not to look as if he was rudely staring. "Can I see something of Penelope there?" he wondered. "Maybe, but with outlines of my chin. And the set of his shoulders, that came from me too. And the way he leans on his spear. Dear gods!" Telemachus was talking to Eumaeus with such affectionate naturalness and ease, as a son talks to a father. There was a buzzing in Odysseus's ears and a hammering in his chest. His thoughts came in a torrent. "Every day that I didn't take him hunting, every day that I didn't show him how to use a bow and a spear, or sail a boat and tame a horse, every day I didn't make him learn lines of poetry and the languages of foreign tribes, every day we didn't tease and torment each other, I curse every one of those days." He forced himself to focus on what Telemachus was saying. "I came here first because," the boy frowned, "that man, Mentor. Well, let's just say that it seemed right to come to you. You are always first with the news, Eumaeus. How are things at the palace? Please tell me my mother hasn't given in to any of the suitors."
"She keeps to her chambers, weeping night and day for her lost husband. No decision made yet, though every day they press her harder for one."
Telemachus handed Eumaeus his spear and crossed the threshold into the hut. Odysseus sprang up from the bench.
"No, no, you stay where you are, old fellow. Plenty of room for me here."
Eumaeus laid down plates of cold meat for them both and mixed them some wine. Telemachus cast an eye towards Odysseus.
"Tell me, Uncle Eumaeus, where does this stranger come from? What ship brought him here? He can't have swum to the island."
It seems rude not to ask Odysseus directly, but I think it would have been considered ruder to address a stranger before the host had made introductions.
"He tells me that he comes from Crete, and that he wanders the world. He escaped a Thesprotian slave ship when it docked here, and this is the hut he stopped at to try his luck."
"He could not have chosen a better," said Telemachus. "But, oh, Eumaeus, he should be enjoying the hospitality of my house, not yours. He needs proper clothing. I'll send him a cloak and a tunic and a pair of sandals, and we can see him on his way to wherever he wishes to go. Or if he wants to stay with you, I'll send you bread, meat and wine for his meals, too. It should all be at my expense, not yours. Just don't let him go anywhere near the palace. The suitors get crueler and more violent every day. He wouldn't be safe." Telemachus offered his hand to Odysseus, who took it and let it go very quickly, afraid to reveal his emotion.
"If I may, young sir," he said, "everything I've heard tells me that you are being wronged. Don't you have brothers and allies? If my home were in the hands of such people, beating your guests, abusing your servants in every vile way, gorging on my food and wine, treating a beloved parent so insultingly, well, I'd raise a pack of loyal friends and family and—"
Telemachus interrupted. "Stranger, you mean well, of course, but you don't quite understand how things are. Zeus, the Sky Father and King of Heaven, ordained that ours should be a small family, not a mighty clan. Laertes, my grandfather, was an only son. His son, my father, is the same. I, too, have no brothers. The strongest and best men of Ithaca, led by my father Odysseus, went to Troy to fight for the honour of Menelaus and our people. Not a single one has returned, my father included. This has left us open to the depredations of princes and lords from the neighbouring islands. Craven scum who did not go off to war." Telemachus laughed bitterly. "To the cowards the spoils. That seems to be the new law."
"And your mother?"
"Excuse me?" Odysseus, who had managed only to whisper the word, repeated it. "Oh, my mother. Well, she cannot bear the idea of remarrying. She keeps to herself in the upper rooms. But you heard Eumaeus. Every day the pressure on her to choose grows. Uncle, why don't you go to her now? Let her know that I'm back from my travels, but do it out of the hearing of any of them, or any of the servants they bribe to spy on us." Eumaeus put on his sandals and left Telemachus and Odysseus alone together. There was silence in the hut. Odysseus was trying to think of something neutral to say when his attention was drawn by the movement of a figure appearing in the front yard. Athena. The dogs had seen her and were backing off, afraid. The sound of their whimpering made Telemachus glance outside, but it was plain that he could not see the goddess. Athena nodded to Odysseus, who stood up, excused himself, and joined her out in the yard. Athena took him around the corner. "Now is the time. Reveal yourself to your son. Make your plans. Work out how the suitors can be killed. When you have done so, go into town. I will join you. Believe me, son of Laertes, I'm as keen for this fight to begin as you are." So saying, she touched Odysseus with her staff. Suddenly he was back in the princely tunic and gold-braided robe with which the Phaeacians had dressed him. His beard darkened from grey, the creases and wrinkles that lined his face smoothed out, and his eyes began to shine with the special vigour and intelligence that had always marked him out from other men. When Odysseus came back into the hut, Telemachus gasped in astonishment. "No one can change their clothes so quickly. And not just your clothes. You're taller. You're younger. You must be a god." You're too old to say that, said Odysseus with a smile. When a boy reaches maturity, he should stop believing that his father is a god, don't you think? Telemachus stared at him, confused. Don't you understand what I'm trying to say? Telemachus shook his head. Telemachus, my son, I am your father. Odysseus came forward to embrace him, but Telemachus pushed him gently away. Just a minute ago, you were an old man dressed in rags. Now you come in here 20 years younger, in a princely cloak and a tunic whiter and crisper than snow. You are Hermes, or one of his band. No, Telemachus, listen to me. I am Odysseus. He took a seat and looked up at his son. As for the changes in me, they are the work of Athena, and it is thanks to her that I am finally home. The words choked in his throat as Telemachus rushed forward, threw his arms around his neck, and cried out, Father! My father! There they stayed, Telemachus hugging his father, both of them weeping like children. They would have remained like that until sunset, crying for the 20 lost years, crying with joy, crying with relief. Had not a thought struck Telemachus. Father, are your men here with you? My men? For a moment Odysseus could not imagine what his son meant. Then he understood. He dropped his head. Alas, no, not one of them. I am the only survivor of all those hopeful Ithacans that set sail with me 20 years ago. I will tell you and your mother the whole story when we have overthrown the suitors. But, father, if what you say is true, then that leaves only two of us against a horde. I mean, it would be tough enough if we had to face 10 or 20 of the bastards, but there are so many more. You might as well know the awful details. Let me see. 52 from Dulichium alone. 24 from Same. 20 from Zakynthos. That's nearly 100 already. They are mostly young, fit and strong. They've grown even stronger on our lamb, our beef and our grain. Each of them has servants too, of course. And, I'm sorry to say, there are 12 high-born lords of Ithaca, also panting for mother's hand in marriage. All of them against us too. I know you're a great hero, father, and I've done my best to train in hand-to-hand combat and believe I could acquit myself well enough in a fight. But we just wouldn't have a chance. I make that 108 suitors, then, said Odysseus. I discount the servants. They'll be untrained and will turn tail and run at the first sight of us. 108 against you, me, Zeus and Athena. I like those odds. Zeus and Athena? When the fighting starts, you can be certain that Athena and the Sky Father will come to our aid. Cheer up, my son. There's no need to be afraid. I'm not afraid, said Telemachus with heat. Believe me, father, I'm no coward. I'm willing to die defending our home. But can you imagine how it would break my mother's heart if we just stepped forward like sheep to be slaughtered? It would achieve nothing. She'd be in the same terrible position as she is now, but this time forced to marry a man in all likelihood responsible for the death of her husband and only son. Odysseus put a hand to his son's shoulder and smiled. Tomorrow morning, I want you to go home and join the suitors in the entrance hall. A short while later, Eumaeus will bring me along. I'll be back in my beggar's clothes, looking old and weak. The suitors will mock and abuse me. Most likely they'll throw things, trip me up, push me over, that kind of thing. Whatever they say, whatever they do, however much it upsets or enrages you, you are not to react.
You must ignore them completely. You understand? This will not be the moment.
Telemachus nodded. The great hall of the palace. Odysseus screwed up his eyes, summoning a mental image.
I'm assuming it's as it was, the swords, spears and shields all displayed on the walls.
Yes. At a sign or word from me, I want you to take all the weapons down, gather them up, and take them to a storeroom. Understood?
Understood.
And Telemachus, if you see Penelope, she is not to know of my return. Not yet. Eumaeus tells me that not all her serving women can be trusted. It is too much to expect her to hide her feelings. There will be a time for our reunion, but for now, the watchword is discretion and secrecy.
That's two watchwords.
Odysseus cuffed the back of Telemachus's head. That's my boy.